Welcome to the PA Podcast. Brian Tag Sontag here with Jenny Coe and Brian Kilpatrick. We had a great conversation with our Facebook friend, Carrie Cousins. We laughed, we cried, we had lots of fun. I hope you enjoy as we did. I feel good in a special way.
I'm in love and it's a sunny day.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Doing good.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi.
This is Jenny.
Jenny, hi. My darling, my love, my everything.
How are you doing, sweetie?
I'm doing. How are you doing?
Oh. Good. I am beat. I wrote so many words today.
I'm so proud of you, by the way. I've been keeping tabs on your word count. I'm like, wow, that's like about 30,000 more than I've done.
Thanks. So I might actually do this year.
You'll get it, you know, and I'll be in line when you're doing book tour.
Okay.
All right. Right. I love that accent, by the way.
Thank you. I got on sale.
Hi, Carrie. This is Brian Kilpatrick.
Hi, Brian. How are you, darling?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing lovely. I'm exhausted myself, but I was like, no, I'm staying up for this. This is too much fun.
All right.
Do you have a busy day?
It was crazy, yeah. You got to love New York City. It's the most exhausting and overwhelming city, but I love it.
It's the energy is great, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah, it can wear you out, but it's anytime I've been there, it's just the energy is just it just sweeps you up. It's amazing.
It really does, and it's funny because the people that you meet at any given time, you know, on the subway alone. the first day I got here, you know, I got on one car, and like two stops after I got on, this family gets on, and the father is completely knackered, and he throws up.
Oh, God.
His kids are just mortified, and these are like 8-year-olds going, not again.
Oh, again? Oh, no.
Not again, yeah. So I get up, and I go down to the end of the car, and this was my first day, which is why it stays on my mind.
Uh-huh.
I go down to the other end of the car, like another stop after that, this homeless man who's like the size of the car gets on and starts asking for money so he can eat. And I'm like, really? Oh, that's why you need the money?
Oh, geez. Oh. So how long have you lived in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah, I've just been here about a year and, was it, 4-5 months.
Oh, so under 2 years. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. What? So what brought you to Brooklyn?
Philadelphia.
All it has to do is not be Philadelphia, and it's a winner with me. I've always loved New York City, and a lot of people have been kind of touting Brooklyn as, you know, it's the next Manhattan because it really is becoming the cool place to live. And it really is. You know, I'm in a nice part of Brooklyn. I'm in Bensonhurst. Mm-hmm. And it's quiet at night time, you know, so get the occasional siren, but that's really not a big deal. But, you know, for New York City, it's pretty quiet at night time. So,
yeah, yeah, because a lot of places there. Yeah, it's just constant. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now, the first apartment you had, that was in Diker Heights, right?
The first apartment was in Sunset Park. And then about... And that was June. And then about 4 months later, it was Diker Heights. And both of them were a nightmare. Never, ever, ever, ever go to Craigslist for apartments ever. They are the nuttiest bastards alive.
I actually just kind of got a new roommate over Craigslist. It's the second time I've done that. The first time I just had some crazy people. I mean, I had a girl tell me she was a dancer and she might not be able to make her rent every month, but that we could probably work something out. And yeah, I was like, eh.
You know, a weekly lap dance, you know, that'll grind you until at least Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
So how long did she live there, BK?
Is she still living there?
Yeah, he keeps her in the closet.
Yeah.
And it puts the lotion on the skin or it gets the hose again.
I saw that movie. Son of a
Well, that's a good thing about dancers. They're super, super skinny, so they can fit in any compact face. You just bend them over, and they love it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
So, Carrie, what do you do? What do you, if you don't mind us asking, what do you do for a living?
I'm still figuring that out.
And me too.
Right now, not much of anything. I've been doing my writing as well. I haven't really done the word count because it hasn't been that many to count. But I'm working on a zombie novel, and it's actually going to be the first of its kind, in that it's going to be a zombie pop-up novel. So I'm working on the details as far as kind of doing maybe some sound effects, and where the pages will be kind of the thicker pages, where, you know, with the kids' books, you know, if you open it to the middle of the book, you know, it was like the spongy stuff, and, you know, it's like every kid loved those. So I want to do something along the lines of, like, maybe a glycerin form or something, yeah, where it would be brains in the middle of the book, and it would be like a red jelly type. Sound effects the whole. So, yeah, brains. Brains. Everyone needs brains. So many of us hardly have used them, you know.
Yeah, well, many have brains. Them, and very few use them. Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, so I'll just call it brains in a book. I don't even have to come up with a real story. Everyone will just buy them. Like, this is fantastic.
Gary Carlson's new book, Brains in a Book.
It's Brains in a Book. You know, if I'm lucky, I can get Michael Caine to, you know, do the audio tape. That'd be fun.
Oh, there you go.
That would be cool. I love Michael Caine.
Brains in a Book by Michael Caine.
That's great.
I'm
loving your English accent. Where in England did you come from?
From Surrey. We had moved around quite a bit, but I had stayed in Surrey the longest, and we were in there, I want to say maybe about a year or two. But my grandfather worked for British Airways, and he was initially British Air Force and subsequently BOAC in British Airways. So it was considerable amount of, you know, going from one spot to another. And we kind of moved all over the place, and I really adapted the voice basically from listening to my grandparents. So it's, good Lord knows only where exactly it's rooted in. My grandparents were both from England. More specifically, my grandfather was Welsh and English. And my grandmother, was originally Irish, but had lived in England. So there's a real hodgepodge going on there, and I just kind of kept it up. You know, for a long time, when I came to the States, I was about 8, and I sounded very American for the longest time, and it really got on everyone's nerves. My grandparents would hear me start getting very, very American, and I'm actually looking at a picture of both my grandparents right now, and I'm laughing because I can hear them right now, like, all right, you need to come back because this is just ridiculous. You need to come home now. What is this use, guys? Yeah, knock it off. Come home.
Yeah, well, that's what I can't wait is when your proper English accent starts mixing with a Brooklyn accent and you kind of like mash those together. You know, I give it 5 or 6 years and, you know.
And this was the thing, was I had, when I was in my early 20s, I had worked in my early teens to, I would say, 22, maybe 23, I had really adapted the American accent. And the only time you knew that I was British was when I got really, really angry. And no one, everyone thought I was like some kind of like, not psycho, but schizophrenic. Like all of a sudden I turned into Sybil because when someone get me really angry, it came on full force. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here?
And probably the key to that was when you said wanker.
Yeah. And I told people to start off and they had no idea what I was saying to them. Like, would you start off? And they're like, what? Like, I know that she's being mean, but I don't know how exactly. But I'm going to play offended until I figure it out. So no, I tell people to sort off, and I would call them wanker, and they'd had no idea. But then people would like tell me to say certain words, and I'm like, I'm not a monkey. And they're like, oh, that's adorable. And I'm like, fuck you, that's not what I'm trying to do here.
Dance for me, monkey.
And after a while, it's like, pay me.
Say some words.
Say anything. Oh. And I'm like, pay me.
Silly,
like,
silly Carrie. Monkeys don't speak. They sign.
You need to tell that to the White House because we've got a few people in there who are proving otherwise lately.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
They're not going so well there these days.
They're having issues.
Oh, man.
Difficulties.
Well, and the thing is, you know, he's trying to prove so hard that he's not Republican, that he's Democrat, he's independent, whatever he wants to call himself. And yet it really is becoming a very Republican mind in there. It seems like it because...
It's two sides of the same coin. You know,
they really are.
There's a difference.
Yeah, it's... You know, I saw that too after he got in there. It was like, let's see, he went, they always had those little secret meetings with the new president, you know, when they first take office. They go in there and they go, okay, we're going to do the little update meetings so you know what the scoop is. And they come out and they're different than what they said on the campaign trail. It's like, what did they tell them? What did they say?
The new world order.
I think it's the Men in Black. That's what I think it is.
I keep getting this idea that it's the sorting hat, that they just huddled around the sorting hat like you were now with Slytherin. What? I spent 4 years as a Hufflepuff. Fuck you.
See, now you and I get that. These two don't know what you're talking about.
I have no idea.
I'm laughing at the laughter because I don't know what the heck you just said.
But just, I get it. It's okay, Carrie. I know what you're talking about.
we go to sit together. But the thing is he's telling us this a bit about Obamacare. It's like you have to have insurance or else you're going to get fined. Well, if we can't afford the insurance, how the hell are we going to afford the fine? And it's very much like the banks. You know, if you go over by 3 pennies, you know, if you've overcharged your account by 5 cents, they charge you $38.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, if I couldn't afford the fucking nickel, how can I afford $38?
Exactly. It's like, there's no logic to it. It's like, we're gonna fine you for not being able to pay the fine.
Exactly. I'm like, what are you gonna do to the homeless people? I mean, are we going to have debtor's prison all over again? You know, you can't afford health insurance, Smokey, because you know, you're still, you know, living on the streets. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. He's shooting his own foot, basically.
I find it disappointing to myself. So, yeah. So.
And I feel like an idiot because I voted for him both times.
Yeah, I did too. And I think back and going, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Who is this guy?
He's done a 180 and no one's liking the 1 or the 80 right now.
The 1 or the 80.
Yeah, the problem is, everybody's rates are going way up. I mean, everybody except for people that, you know, are basically homeless that don't want to work for a living. I mean, because we have to pay for them.
Leave me out of this, okay?
Yeah.
I'm not homeless, but I don't work for a living right now.
You know, I'm trying. And that's just it. You know, that was basically the root of my exhaustion all day today was, you know, going to these offices and trying to get jobs. You know, I had landed 3 interviews today, and I now had to do follow-ups. It's not so much that there are people out there who don't want to work. It's the hoops that New York, and I know it's not just New York State. It's clear across the board.
Oh, yeah.
The hoops that they're making you jump through to try and get work, and the process that you need to go through, it is really exhausting. You know, I've gone from downtown Brooklyn to midtown Manhattan to basically reiterate everything I'd said in the one office in Brooklyn and this morning. And they're making you go through all these hoops and filling out these applications for jobs. And they want to know 10 years of, you know, where I've lived. I'm like, good luck. You know, I'm going to need more than an hour to fill that out. I've been subletting.
Have you worked in New York since you've been there? Have you had any job? Yeah.
I haven't left the island. I'm like, I'm my own series of Lost right now. It's like, I've got my own farm initiative going on. You know, it's, I honestly, I had not left the island since I moved here because I can't afford to. I have no money.
You know what? I would, you know, when they do ask that, like that particular question, I would just pick a town in England because they're not going to, you know, check out England so much. I just say, hey, I lived there for, you know, 25 years or something like that. Then I moved to, you know, downtown New York. Then I moved out to Brooklyn. So it doesn't. So they think you know, you don't look like somebody that's has jet set it all over the place. You know, I mean, because they want somebody. People are going to want somebody solid, you know, that I think is going to be around.
But you know what? It's not even that easy, because if I were to say that I lived in England for so long, well, we'll need to see your birth certificate. We need to see your passport. We need to see the visa. We need to meet the person who wrote out your visa. We need to meet his parents. And we need a backstory as far as university.
We need a lock of his child's hair.
Exactly. What was the password? We need you to bring Hedwig and his feathers. You know, it's like, no, I'm not going to show you a scarf.
Okay, just say you lived in Brooklyn all your life, and if they question it, you go, are you questioning me? Yeah, you wanker. You know, just deny never ever living in England.
It's a lot of, you know, hurry up and wait. They've got they're rushing you in, and then you're sitting in the waiting room staring at this woman and her child for the next hour. And even the kids are irritated with the office. It's like, can we go? Can we just go? McDonald's has coupons. I want my Happy Meal, damn it.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah. And on that note. Carry on.
So is that really your aspiration, though, is to be to write, you know, write novels?
Yeah, I've been writing for about 20-odd years, and it had been mostly short stories. I'd worked on some novels, and It was crazy because I've been working on one novel for about 2 years, and it was basically about this girl who is a tattoo artist. She's all tattered up. She sees her boss get murdered, and she kind of avenges her boss's death. And then I started reading The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and I'm like, oh, fuck it. I can't read this book anymore.
Oh, man, that sucks.
Yeah, and it was like, all right, well, but mine was more of a supernatural feel to it. It wasn't, you know, Swedish Dan Brown the way Stieg Larsson is. But still, it was, there were too many coincidences.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, I've got to wait another decade now for everyone to forget about this, folks, so I can continue my story. So I put that on the back burner, and I've been writing some other stuff, but it's still...
Yeah, hang on to it, and then it'll come back around.
Yeah, they'll forget it. Everyone gets amnesia at least once. What?
Have you had anything published at all?
Not yet. I'm very nervous about getting some of my stories published just because when I go back at them, it's, I'm not 100% confident the way I'd like to. And I, you know, if I'm not confident, I can just imagine what some of the publishers would say. It's like, this is drivel. You know, it's like, if I run out of toilet paper, maybe I can use this. I'm like, no. So I haven't kind of put myself out there completely.
Just, hey, no guts, no glory. Just go for it.
And, you know, you don't need a publisher, you know, per se. You can always self-publish.
Yeah, nowadays, right?
You know, and a lot of people are going that route.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There was a writer, and of course, this is when my amnesia kicks in. He actually became famous because he would read his story in Penn Station. He took his book and he was starting to sell his own copies. And then it got picked up by a publishing house because he had just decided, you know what? None of the publishing houses that I've gone to have picked it up. So let me just go.
Well, I mean, you think about it, like, J.K. Rowling was turned down by, like, 16 different publishing houses before Bloomberg took it.
And she had, I mean, it's funny because, and I know I make so many references to her stories, but she really has been a role model in a lot of this. And to have that kind of strength, you know, she was a welfare mom, and she would write her stories in cafes, and there's something really inspiring about that. It's like, you know, I'm having a rough time now, but if I, you know, just hold on to that tenacity and that drive, you know, something will come of it. I just had to, you know, keep pushing at it.
Yeah, there's this guy, and I wish I remembered his name, but there's a bar that I go to called Lucy's, and I haven't seen him in there in years, but he used to be there, like, every time I would go in there, sitting in the same stool right near the door, and he'd be scribbling out these writings, and, you know, I tried to talk to him every now and then, and he just really was very, very strange, you know, and kind of standoffish.
You were talking to the Unabomber.
He kind of looked, he basically looked like the Unabomber. I mean, he had a big old beard. He looked half homeless, I mean, to me. And,
I never looked,
you know,
in
I mean,
San
and
Diego.
he had these, you know, crumpled up papers that he carried around and, you know, like, writing stuff with stuff scratched out and arrows going everywhere. And,
so there ain't a manifesto.
Well, no, I talked to the bartender, who I'd known really well finally about him. I'm like, what's up with this guy? I mean, you know, he says he's writing a book, but I mean, do you really believe this guy can? She's like, well, he's already published 2 books. This is his third, and he's been signed for, you know, after his first book, he got signed on for like 4 more books. So, you know, but I mean, yeah, it's just
David
like
Paul Dachi.
David Paul Dachi. Yeah. No, it was some sort of kind of, oh, science fiction-y type thing. I don't know. More like a Conan the Barbarian type thing, I think.
Oh,
I don't know.
Really?
Yeah. You know, it's like swords and sorcery type stuff.
Okay.
Crazy stuff.
So, I'm going through my Rolodex of who that could be. I'm like, Gene Roddenberry? No, wait, wrong genre. Hang on a second.
So, Carrie, did you go to college or university?
I went to university. I went to Art Institute of Philadelphia, and that really panned out well. And
okay. Just curious. Yeah.
I still got the bills to remember them by, but I've got the case that I got, but that's about it. I'm doing some of the artwork as well, you know, in between. You know, looking for jobs and doing my writings, I'll do some painting and stuff like that. But
so you paint too?
I do. I like to use the acrylic paints. I like the vibrancy. There's a lot of power in the colors with acrylics.
Well, cool.
and I'll go and I'm trying to do some mixed medias where it's, you know, chalks with acrylics or, you know, kind of almost like Salvador Dali, but parallel.
Salvador Carey.
yes, Salvador Carey.
We're cool. That's great. Hey, okay, you live in New York.
Yeah.
What's your favorite deli?
Oh.
You've got to have a favorite deli. Come on.
Absolutely. I had, when I first come to New York, there was, I had been on a temp assignment on the Upper West Side, and literally around the corner, there was this deli from where I'd worked, and they made the best sandwiches, like these roast beef sandwiches, and they would slice it thin. And I can't remember the name of it, but I would go to them every chance I could get. And anytime I would go onto the Upper West Side when I was working for a public theater, I would go out of my way, like I'd leave an hour early for work so that I could
make that
walk to the deli and then jog back to Central Park to work at Delacorte and have the sandwich.
Oh,
and
wow.
People thought I was crazy, but I've got like the best looking calves you've ever seen because I walk everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But they had the best sandwiches. Now I can't remember the name of it. I think it was like Al's Deli or Albert's Deli or something along those lines. But it was
I'm not sure. There's so many delis there.
So many delis. I mean, honestly, it's hard not to bump. They're almost as popular as Starbucks.
Yeah. Exactly.
I heard of Starbucks. It's a revolutionary new type of cafe. They're hard to come by.
yeah, if you've got no arms and legs.
Exactly, you know, and even the people in the wheelchair are like, get out of my way, I need my fix. They'll run you over. They are heartless bastards.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can't believe I'm out here in San Diego, California, and I just can't believe how many, I mean, just horrible delis there are out here. I mean, how hard is it to make a decent sandwich? I mean, you know, they don't have to be like the great delis in New York, but I mean, there's some where it's just like, this is horrible.
You just want a good Reuben. Come on.
Yeah.
And if you go through any of the western states, like if you go through like Texas or Oklahoma or any of it, they will literally give you this look like you have a third head coming out of your neck if you ask for skim milk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they look at me like I'm like, what? And I'm like, no, skim milk, non-fat milk. I'm like, no, sweetheart, we don't do that. And I'm like, what do you mean? You don't? It's skim milk. And they're like, no, we don't have any of that. We can give you hot.
And there's only sweet tea, too. So.
Exactly.
It's only sweet tea. You want tea without sugar? No. We don't do that.
Sweetie, can I have some sweet tea, please? What?
Yeah, I live in Florida, so I'm used to the, you know, everything's, it's like, not sweet tea. They look at you with... Yeah. You know.
They give you the side eye.
Yeah, they give you the you're not from here, boy. It's like I've lived here for a while.
When I was, it was funny, I was in Florida, my grandparents had come to the States for a little bit and they lived maybe about 2 or 3 years in Florida.
Where
maybe longer.
In
Port Richey.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. I know Port Richey.
That's where grandparents go. Yeah, Florida.
I got an aunt that lives there.
Go. It's pamphlets in Braille so that the old people can read it now. and I go to the movies, you know, my grandparents would slip me money. And it was so funny because I felt like I was in the mafia. You know, my grandmother would wait for my grandfather to leave the room. She's like, darling, just take the tenner. And my grandfather would wait until we got in the car. Don't tell your grandmother. Here's another tenner. And I'm like, this is the best racket ever. All I have to do is shut up and I get paid to just be quiet. So I'd go to the movies and they would do the trailers and commercials before the movie would get on. And this really shows that, you know, in my 20s and I was still the youngest person in Port Richey. in my country.
Surely.
It's true. It's funny because it's true. Some woman was throwing popcorn at the screen because it was Yoko Ono on the screen. And this woman just called her a bitch because she broke up the Beatles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And this woman was in her 50s. I'm like, you've really got to let it go, darling.
You got to let it go, darling.
let it go.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
I do want to apologize to you guys in advance if I drop off suddenly. The cat is chasing bugs and he's jumping up on my computer and licking the screen. I think he's lost his mind. I'm not sure.
It's my fault.
Well, no, Darwin's been a little crazy since he got here. But...
Oh, no. Now, how old is Darwin?
He is going to be 2 in December.
Oh.
So he's still a youngin'. He's plenty of energy. Always getting into trouble.
I've seen the picture that you put up, and those eyes can, like, pierce right through you.
Oh,
yeah. Are you talking about Darlin or Bud, though? The white cat?
Yeah.
The white cat was Buddy. That was my little boy that died in July.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's a sweetie, yeah.
He was our podcast kitty, because he would be on every podcast. I mean, because
mascot now.
He was up there in age like 17, and he would just come in 18. And just want to 18, and he would want to complain about everything. So he'd just come in and go, meow! I mean, it was so loud, like in the middle of podcast. You know, we'd be like interviewing comedians, and then I'd be like, hey, you have a cat? I mean, come on, we're doing a podcast here. Can't you put him in another room? And he'd be like, I do have a cat, but that wasn't my cat.
I bet Elaine loved that. She'd argue back with Buddy.
Yeah.
Oh, he was quite a character.
Oh,
of course, this one is too. You know.
Oh yeah, Darwin is he's something else.
So he's young and full of energy, and like I said, getting into everything.
Yeah. So look at that.
Knocking shit down.
Out of all the toys that you got him, tell me he plays with the string, right?
Yeah, Darwin is the string on a stick boy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because these things come with a mouse on the end, and it like squeaks and makes noise and shit.
Will not
touch it while the mouse is on it. Will not touch it. Cut that mouse off. That is the best toy ever.
He's walked around with it on his
mouth. They last for about a day.
No, they last about a month. We're on our third one.
They tear it off and it's gone. It's like, okay, let's do string.
I had my cat Bob Dylan, and he was hysterical.
Bob Dylan?
I named him Bob Dylan, yeah. and this is a shout out to my friend. I don't know if I can do a full name or if that's going to get bleeped out. Jennifer Simonetti. She's awesome. She is absolutely the most awesome person I've ever known who is not my grandfather. She has like the best laugh, and she introduced me to the guy who was giving away the kittens that Bob Dylan was a litter of. And when I was, I knew I was going to get a cat, and I had agreed with my roomies at the time, you know, that we'd get a cat for the house, and, you know, he'd be my responsibility. And I'm trying to come up with all these names, and of course I'm coming up with very British names and all of this, and Jen's laughing at me through the whole drive to Staten Island, and I'm just like, oh, I'll name it Cadbury, and I'll name it Britain, and I'll name it this and that and the other. And I get the cat, and you know, where it's filming, it's like, I don't know what to name him, so we'll just wait, and he'll tell me what his name is. So we get him back to my house, and I lived in just outside of Edison, New Jersey at the time. We bring him home, and he's meowing, and he wants out of the cage, and I want to take him out of the cage while we're in the car, but, you know, I didn't want to cause an accident, because he had a lot of energy. He's like, get me out of here, or I will tear the place apart. And so we get him back to my place, we let him out of the cage, and of course he runs rampant everywhere, And I'd invited Jen to hang out for a little bit. And she'd said, no, you know, we've got to, I've got to meet up with a friend named Dylan. And my friend, my roommate, Beth, and I are like, Dylan! And all of a sudden it just popped in. It's like, Bob Dylan! Yes! And Jen lost, but it kind of stuck. And after a while, we'd look at him, and he would give us this look like you've seen on Bob Dylan's face. Like, these eyes would kind of crinkle up, going, are you going to give me pot soon, or do I have to play you a song, or what's going on? And so he kind of really fell into the name, because he would talk to us. We couldn't understand a word he was saying. He'd get tangled up in blue bed sheets, and he was a real cool cat. So it just kind of, it all fell in line. And we did a housewarming party maybe about a week or two later, and Bob Dylan ended up being the guest of honor. Everyone just kind of swarmed around this cat, and he's, you know, running all over the place. Jenny fell in love with him, and I fell in love with him. And we apparently had a ghost in the house, and the ghost would play with him as well. And I'm not kidding you. The ghost played with him? The ghost
played with my cat. Did you just say that?
Yes. And Jen will back me up completely on this. You can ask her. She will back me up completely, because she and I both have like this, I don't know if you call it the sixth sense and not get like just giggles, because it just sounds absurd, but we would get the sixth sense, and she had picked up on the spirit in the house as well. When we had the party, she said, I don't mean to freak you out, but I don't think you're alone in this house. And I said, no, I'm not. And there had been other occurrences. So, but long story short, the ghost would play with my cat.
Wow, I never heard that before. That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll accept it.
and there would be these orbs that you would see against the wall. It was a three-story house, and when you walk into the hallway, going from the front door, going into the hallway, the stairs were to your immediate left. And so there was wall there, of course, going further down the hallway. And in the evening, you know, there was no reason for it, but you could see some kind of orb, some kind of light going along that wall. And Bob Dylan would jump at it, and it would,
wow.
And this thing would move. And it wasn't a reflection. It was inexplicable circle along this wall, and Bob Dylan would play with it. My friends would come to visit me when we would all go to New York. They'd spend the night, and they loved Bob Dylan, and he would jump, and he was like an acrobat. He was doing jumps and jumping at the stick on the string on the stick. He had torn that little mouse off, you know, and we bought all these toys, and we wasted money at Target because he just played with the string on the stick. it was absolutely crazy. And Bob would sleep with me. He'd alternate between me and one of my other roommates, and he would sleep with me at the foot of the bed. Well, apparently one night, and I don't know what exactly triggered it, I had 10 claws in my cheek. Because Bob Dylan got freaked out, and all you heard was like, and this cat was at my head, and there were 10 little claw marks on my cheek, and like, what are you doing? You're going to kill me in my sleep. I knew it.
Oh, no.
Fine, have some pot. I don't care. Just get away from, get off my cheek.
I've read those books. Don't do that.
Stephen King warned me all about you. It was this ghost would play with cats. He would absolutely play with Bob Dylan.
That's wild.
And just
wild.
Antagonize him to no end.
Really?
But Bob, it was funny because Bob did not get freaked out. He would play back.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely bizarre. And I did write, I wrote a story, a little short story loosely based on that experience, on seeing Bob playing with,
Bob and the ghost?
No, Bob wasn't the ghost.
No, Bob and the ghost.
Bob and the ghost. The story is called Cleaning Up and Clearing Out, or Clearing Up and Cleaning Out, and you can actually find it in my notes. And it was a fun story to write because it was just all the memories that were coming back from it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy stuff.
I've always felt that dogs or cats both recognize the paranormal and stuff that we don't. I mean, I think everybody's seen a cat or a dog, like a dog just start barking at nothing.
Right.
Or a cat just all of a sudden getting freaked out and staring at something and then running off or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think we've all seen that, and it's like, yeah, they're seeing something. I mean, they're just seeing something that we can't.
My cat will do that too, LB. He just, he'll sit and all of a sudden I'm going, what the hell are you looking at? There ain't nothing over there. He's probably seeing a gnat or something. I mean, the dude's got like x-ray, but he's got the super vision. I'm going.
Darwin does that too. He'll sit there and just like, be staring at something. And then I'm like an idiot. I'm looking up there going, what?
I know.
And then 10 minutes later, there'll be like this little microscopic gnat fly by.
I know. Yeah. How did you see that?
I don't think that's what it saw. I think it's something else. But what was funny was my biological mother, Kate, she had a cat named Spider. And I mean, this was a very sexy cat. And I think I told you about this, Jenny. This was like the Angelina Jolie of cats. This was the sexiest cat ever.
A sexy cat?
This was
I love the name. I love the name.
But it was Spider. So it was like car.
I love it better now.
Yeah. And she was a Russian blue cat, very sleek, very gray.
Wow.
It's the kind of cat you would see in those very metropolitan commercials for like cola sinks or whatever. It's like very streamlined and very, you know, muscle and all of this and very modern cat. And she would do this bit of, she would walk alongside you and her tail, most of her body would be separate from you, but her tail would just kind of slink along your calf and just hang there. And then as soon as she finally separated her tail from you, it would do this little swoosh thing in the air. And I was just like, you naughty little minx. And she turned back at me and gave this look like, you know it, darling.
Nice.
But she was a very sexy cat. If she became a woman, I would probably be her bitch. I wouldn't doubt it.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh.
Hey, Carrie, with all, you know, living in, Brooklyn and that, have you seen any cool shows or comedy or anything in New York, Manhattan?
Oh, God, yeah. I was lucky in that I caught quite a bit my real job when I moved here was about a month after I moved here, and I worked for the Public Theater, the New York Shakespeare not festival, but the Shakespeare Center. Joe Papp, who was a brilliant, brilliant man, in that he believed theater should be free. People who couldn't afford to go to the Broadway shows, he wanted this education to be open to them. So he created the New York Shakespeare Festival, which was also known as the Public Theater. Without getting into too much history, it was the building that Public Theater inhabits was the original New York Public Library. Before New York Public Library was there, that was the first library in New York City, and it was where all the immigrants had come to, inclusive of Mandy Patinkin's grandfather, had lived in the building that Public Theater now inhabits. So they do a lot of fantastic productions, and in the year that I had worked for them, I managed to meet some incredible people and see some really fantastic shows that I don't know that I could ever see them, you know, if I didn't work there. we got to see, if you remember the movie Giant, they had done a theatrical production of it. And it was Kate Baldwin, it was Brian James Darcy, a lot of really beautiful, fantastic people, some of which I've actually made friends with. Yeah, and it's funny, it's like some of them are my Facebook friends, and it's like, you wouldn't even know I existed unless I worked at Public Theatre. And they remembered me, you know, they would come back and, you know, come to shows there. It was one of the greatest jobs I've ever had. Unfortunately, it was short-lived, but it was a great job. I got to meet some really incredible people. Oh, my God. I met Anne Hathaway a couple of times.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I done kind of security for her when she would go there to celebrate her birthday. They had opened a restaurant called The Library, go figure. And so it threw everyone off. It was like Iceland and Greenland. Well, where do you want to go? Let's go to Greenland. No, it's really cold there.
Cold there. Let's go to Iceland.
No, it's all green in Iceland. There.
Yep.
So they've got a restaurant called The Library, which the history of it is it's a nod to the fact that this was the first library in New York City.
Wow.
Yeah. And so there's a tremendous amount of history. It's comprised of five different theaters. They're doing Michael Cerveris, who you probably know from Fringe, but he's done Sweeney Todd with Patti LuPone, and he's done like all these major productions. He's a major Broadway actor. Yeah. I just found out today that he is doing a production at the Public Theatre now called Funhouse, which was actually workshopped a year ago at Public in one of the other theatre houses, and is now in one of the bigger theatre houses at Public. They brought it back. Earlier in the year, we had Here Lies Love, which was the history of Imelda Marcos. Didn't touch on the shoes. It touched on her rise to fame. And it's actually based on David Byrne's CD, Here Lies Love. He made this a CD about 3 years ago, and it was very conceptualized. Worked with Fatboy Slim, did a lot of duets with like Florence Welch from Florence and the Machine, Sia, all these really remarkable artists. And then it became this production, this Broadway production.
Cool.
Well, off-Broadway production. And it was fantastic. And it was a who's who in the audience. There were more famous people in the audience than there were on the stage. But what was funny was I would see David Byrne like on a daily basis, and, you know, watching from behind the scenes, watching these productions going on, and they would set up these mud flaps so that the audience couldn't see what was going on behind the stages. It had taken up the entire theater. And so I would watch David Byrne walking through, and he wore some really batshit crazy outfits. I mean, this man, he is out there. He's brilliant. He is an absolute brilliant brain on him, in his concepts and the things that he's produced solely from his thoughts. I had nothing but respect for him, but my God, the man is out there. He has this full engineers, like a trained engineer's outfit. And I was waiting for him to put the hat on. He's got these bright, stark white dungarees and a shirt under it. And he would have all the dancers wearing these great outfits. But the staff, the ushers, had to wear these bright pink jumpsuits. And they all got outfitted for it. And I was so grateful to be backstage that I didn't have to wear that. Because me and that, it didn't look like, you know, Puff and Stuff got neon. It was not a pretty sight at all. But and it was funny. And I would watch him dancing to his own music. And he's bopping his head and just kind of like, he's not like going full out dancing, but he's just bopping his head and like dancing to his own music.
I can see him doing that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and I'm thinking
back,
the days of MTV where they actually had music videos and not, you know, Snooki, but when they had music videos and you would watch him doing Burning Down the House and he's bopping his head. That's not choreography. That's just,
that's just him.
That's just him being him.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, and he was brilliant. So watching all these productions, and the thing is, they would do smoke. They'd have like, I guess dry ice or whatever. I don't know what the deal was, but there would be a lot of smoke for these productions. We had the fire alarm going off on like, almost a daily basis.
Oh no.
Yeah. There were so many times where we had to send the people outside because the smoke alarms would go off.
Oh, geez.
From what was going on not only on our side in the theater, but also the public theater has a restaurant, and they also have Joe's Pub, which is not actually a pub, it's like a concert venue. Where David has performed there as well. And incidentally, Joe's Pub was the first spot that Adele had hit when she started doing her US tour. Her very first US tour.
Yeah.
Her first location was Joe's Pub.
Cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So they would have their own situations going on over there. So it was almost on a daily basis where we had to leave the building, the entire theater, because the fire alarms would go off.
A hot production.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it ran for the longest time. I mean, it was an incredible production. Alex Timbers was the director. They're looking for another venue for it now, and I don't know if they found anything for it, but to see that and to get to see it as many times as I did, and then getting to watch the shows in Central Park at Delacorte, doing Shakespeare in the Park, I got to see a lot of great productions in the last year, and it's been amazing.
Nice.
Fantastic. Well, my claim to fame on Broadway is I've got to shake hands with the Fonz, Henry Winkler, and I got his autograph, and I got to hug Doris Roberts. Everybody loves Raymond's mother, and I got her autograph.
Very cool.
She is such a sweetheart.
She is a sweetheart. Funny. She's so small though. She's such a. Of course,
she's
I'm 6'4". She's a sweetheart. She's a sweetie. But that's my claim to fame for Broadway.
Nice. Right. Hey, take what you can get, right?
Oh, and it was magical. It's like, the Fonz. Hey, dude. Oh.
It was great.
Yeah.
We had
it was fun.
They do the annual, not Fringe. It's not the Fringe Fest, but it's called Under the Radar. And it's all the theaters will do like small productions to kind of get them out there, you know, like workshop these plays and really get them out there. I think it was like February of this year we had ours, and they would do parties in the evening. And I don't know if you've heard of Reggie Watts. He does a lot of work with Comedy Central. I got to befriend him because he was constantly coming to the public theater for these smaller productions, and he was the MC for one night. Well, they're playing, you know, after a while, you can only stand around when music's playing for so long, and then you start dancing with it. Julie Taymor, who has directed The Lion King on Broadway, she comes in and she sees a bunch of us as ushers dancing.
Nice.
I think Gangnam Style song, and we're all doing the dance, the Gangnam Style song, and she's just walking through going, great, all right, now I know what's going on here. I'm like, hi. But it was quite the experience. You never know who you would run into there.
Sounds fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Audra Ann McDonald, who has always been one of my absolute favorite artists, Harvey Fierstein. I got to meet Eddie Redmayne, and this was before Les Mis had come out in theaters and made everyone cry. It was really fantastic time to be in theater. I wish I still had the job, but it just didn't happen.
Yeah, that's a shame. That sounds like a really fun. Well, at least you had the experience.
Yeah.
You got
to
enjoy it. You got to enjoy it. It's part of your life now, so.
Exactly.
And you got memories you'll never forget, so.
Exactly.
That's
what would be true justice, true creative justice, is if one of my stories becomes a play, and I can, you know, get it produced there, and I can torment my old manager if he's still with me.
Let's hope that happens. Let's hope that happens.
Fingers crossed. I just glare at him. I'm just like, hello.
Have faith. Have faith. It will.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll get there. You'll get there. So fantastic. We've had such a great talk.
Oh, my God.
It's been a lot of fun. It's been an hour already.
I know. I don't shut up. When you get me going, I don't shut up, so I apologize.
No, we
didn't even have to ply her with liquor.
No.
Yeah.
No apology at all. It's been just...
But, you know, you could try. I'm not opposed to that. You know, like, if you want to send something your PS, I'll sign off on it. That's fine.
No, you've been just a lovely, delightful guest. And your voice, oh, my God. Well, I always love that accent. But anyhow. Okay, I'm a little prejudiced there, but no, I just...
Tell me again half the work that I've gotten. I'm trying to do voiceover work because it really has. It's like, I have no skills to speak of. This is the only thing that's making any money for me.
Oh, I hope you had fun with us, Carrie.
Definitely. Definitely.
I think you did.
Yeah.
I know we all did. So, wow, just what can I say? Just thanks so much for your time. And I should be able to get this up by Sunday. And it was just a very fun, enjoyable talk and great podcast. And
yes,
been a treat. Been a treat.
Funny.
I'll be happy to do it again. If we can get Elaine on here, that would be awesome. If we can get Elaine Bruce there and just riff off each other, that would be awesome. I love listening to everyone on here, so fantastic.
Great. We can make that happen, okay?
That would be great.
Okay. Everybody have a great evening, and I had a fantastic time.
It was a lot of fun.
Yes.
I gotta go rest my brain though.
Yeah,
all this writing's killing me.
Jenny's got over 30,000 words in her brain, and BK's been kind of feeling a little bit weak, and Carrie's had a rough long day.
Yeah.
So we've all done pretty good. Consider
one question for Jenny, and it's kind of off topic. What do you listen to by way of music when you write?
I don't listen to anything while I'm...
She's not a good multitasker.
Oh, it's not. I don't want my head getting distracted.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes I'll have something on, but 99% of the time it's quiet because I can really drill in and focus when it's quiet.
Mm-hmm.
When I've got a lot of noise going on, it's like I get that ADD thing going on, or it's like, you know, right, typing the story. Oh, what's on the TV? What's I love this song, Squirrel.
Squirrel fax machine.
Mosquito.
The reason why I ask, and I've been getting addicted to them, and I don't know if you've seen me posting it, there's a group called Nightmares on Wax. And it's no words. It's basically an instrumental. It's jazz, basically, and really great music. And it's helped me do some of my writing. You know, a lot of times I will listen to music where it's songs. You know, it's words, and it will kind of create inspiration. But Nightmares on Wax, they have a really great vibe. So I've been kind of touting them a lot. And what I'll do
is give them a check, see how, see if they help me.
I'll put up one of the links on my Facebook, and you can and I'll tag you on it, and you can check it out if you want to. But it's a great soundtrack, and again, it's no words, so it won't be too distracting, Kitty. But it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. Give me a tag on it. I would like that.
Definitely.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Carrie. We'd love having you on, and we'll be sure to get that going with Elaine Boozler here sometime soon. I think that would be great.
Special request. I think she's fantastic.
Oh, she is. And I don't think we had her on long enough when we had her on, so we definitely need to get back.
We've never had Elaine Boozler.
We didn't we? I thought we had her on for a short period of time. She was supposed to come on. Oh, wasn't she supposed to come on with one of the other comedians?
You're thinking of not Kathy Ladman.
We had Kathy Ladman. We had Wendy Liebman. We've had.
Okay. Well, whatever.
Okay.
I'm wrong. So since we've never had her.
You can lure her in, you know. She Kathy Ladman is another excellent comedian.
Oh yeah, she was a. Yeah, her interview with her was fantastic, too. She's a great person, so.
She cocks me up to no end.
She's a sweetheart, too. So, we've talked to a lot of great people, and you're on the list, too.
Oh, thank you.
How about them apples?
I had done amateur stand-up a couple of times, and they would put the red light on, and I just kept going. I was like, fuck it, I don't care. And I just kept going. And pretty soon you can see the guy by the red light waving and like, get off. I'm like, no, you're not getting the mic back. Forget it.
All right.
Well, have a great night, all. It was such a treat. Thank you so much.
Take care, Carrie.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the PA Podcast. Find us on the PAPodcast.com and on iTunes. Thanks to Carrie Cousins for the fun time. As always, thanks to Jenny Coe and Brian Kilpatrick. Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the cookie jar.